This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. This is Bob Main, and you're listening to the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop.
About to learn concealed carry secrets that most Americans will never know. With your free subscription to Concealed Carry Report, you will learn how to select the best carry holster, how to know when it's okay to use deadly force, self-defense video of the week, situational awareness tips from fellow subscribers who've had to defend themselves, politically incorrect commentary, unbiased product and gear reviews. Go to www.gunrightsradio.com/USCCA. And sign up for your free subscription to Concealed Carry Report.
Welcome to episode number 114. And if you are a new listener to the program, you're going to find out real quickly. I am not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. And I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a regular guy. I just like to shoot. I like the shooting sports. I like concealed carry. And I just travel around Texas and Oklahoma. I'm in sales for a living. So oftentimes, as I'm doing right now, I am dictating this from my vehicle. Today I'm headed down to Midlothian, Texas on a father and son retreat. Our church is holding a pretty cool weekend father and son retreat. My son turns 13 pretty soon. Haven't had a chance to get him out to one of these, so it's going to be just a great time, just some dad and son time, and I'm looking forward to it, folks. This is a lot of fun. But while I'm driving down there, I am going to go ahead and give you some thoughts here on this episode. But before I get into that, I want to cover a couple of brief announcements. Folks, version number 2 of my premium podcast that I'm calling the Shooters Club Podcast. It's out. It's done. As a matter of fact, the first several people who made the investment have already received an email from me notifying them to download it. If you wish to support this show, it's only a $15 investment, and most of everything on that podcast is information I have not had a chance to cover yet on the Handgun World Show. So I think you're going to really like that. It's only $15. Go to www.handgunworld.com. If you are one of the people who have already made the investment, you should be getting an email. By the way, check your spam folders. Sometimes that gets sent into a spam folder. I'm not sure why. So check that, and you should have an email from me. Also, as you know, this show is part of the Gun Rights Radio Network. GunRightsRadio.com is their website. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time. And if you're not a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, join. There's a lot of great people on there. Every podcaster on the Gun Rights Radio Network has their own thread there, including me. So we would like to hear from you. And also consider supporting the Gun Rights Radio Network. They're giving away a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm compact. Nice pistol. Folks, you know, get active. All of this is meant to get you active in supporting gun rights and supporting the mission that we have here for all of the podcasters, and that is not just talking about shooting, but also preserving our rights. With Obama out there calling for more common sense gun control, whatever that means, think about that. Common sense gun control. I personally think we already have enough common sense gun control. We have too much gun control. So I think we've actually, I take that back. I don't think we have any more common sense gun control. I think we've gone way beyond common sense, and we're way overdoing it, if you want my opinion. We're overdoing the concept of regulating firearms. I'll get back to that a little bit later in the show. All right, the last announcement I want to make, some of you might know from my posts on the forum, I'm evaluating a couple of concealed carry holsters. The good folks from High Noon Holsters sent me two of their excellent leather holsters to review. I'll tell you what, there are two holsters that if you're going to get leather, I highly, highly recommend. One of them is a Milt Sparks holster, and the other is High Noon Holsters. So Alex at High Noon was gracious enough to send me a couple of them. He sent me one for my car PM9, which is called the Hideaway. And then he sent another one for my Glock 19, which is the Alter Ego. I'm carrying them both for the next couple weeks. I'm kind of switching off back and forth, doing the appendix carry method. Matter of fact, I got the High Noon Hideaway on right now and my car PM9 as I head down to the retreat. And so, you know, I want you to know that I don't like to do reviews on any kind of equipment or guns or ammo or anything unless I've actually used them or owned them. So this has given me a great opportunity. When 2 or 3 weeks is over with and I've had a chance to really evaluate these, I will be doing a podcast right here on the Handgun World Show, and I'll also be doing a YouTube video. And by the way, that reminds me to encourage you to check out my YouTube channel. Just search Handgun World Show on YouTube. If you want to look at the two holsters I'm talking about from High Noon Holsters, just go to www.highnoonholsters.com. All right, that's enough for the announcements. I don't like for this show to get too commercial. When you spend your time listening to this, I want you to get value. That's one of the reasons why I don't like to have a lot of sponsors and commercials on this program. So the main topic of this show is going to be listener feedback. I've got a backlog again, so I need to get caught up here. And I find that this is an easy way for me, rather than just reply to you via email. Some of you I do reply. Some of you I click reply and I type you a little message in response. But some of you ask such great questions that I'd like the rest of the listeners to this show to hear my answers. And so some of these are really insightful, very thoughtful questions and comments, and I want to share some of these with you. Folks, keep this coming. I really like these types of comments. I'm an open-minded guy, folks, so I like anything that you want to send, even if it's constructive criticism. All right, so my email address is bob@handgunworld.com. All right, this first one that I want to cover with you comes from Damien from Saxey, Texas. Damien's real active on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. And I got to share the title of this email with you. The title is What I Learned About Buying and Selling a Gun. Now, I'll bet there's a lot of you listen into this show, and you've purchased and sold several guns before. I've sold too many guns. You know, most of the guns that I've sold, I regret selling. So I just want to start this off by saying, if you're thinking about selling a gun, don't. If you can avoid it, don't do it. Most guns, you're going to regret selling. Now, if it's just something you just know you're not going to use, you know, if it's something you just never, ever shoot, you just know you're not going to use it, it has no collector's value or anything like that, you know, maybe it might be a good idea for you to sell it. But doggone it, I don't know about you. Can you relate to this? Every gun that I've sold, well, not every, all but one, and I'll tell you what that gun is. Every one that I've ever sold, I regret getting rid of it. In fact, some of them I bought that same model again several months down the road. So, Damien, this was a very appropriate email called What I Learned About Buying and Selling a Gun. So I'm not going to read this to you word for word, but I'm going to share a lot of it here with you because he says some good stuff, and I think a lot of you can relate to this. He writes, Lesson number one, make sure you really think about why you're buying a particular handgun and the cost associated with using it. He says, I purchased a Glock 36 because I studied how reliable the Glock was and the fact that most police officers and some military use it as their service pistol. The Glock is a simple design that keeps your focus on shooting and no buttons to mess with when you're trying to deploy it. Now, see, I want to stop right there for a minute and inject a comment here. That's exactly why I own Glocks, is because of the simplicity of them. Now, the Smith & Wesson M&Ps are pretty simple. The XDs are not quite as simple as the M&Ps and the Glocks, but, yeah, simple enough. I think that's so important, although I do think that things like loaded chamber indicators and things like that and grip safeties are useless, but, you know, I don't want to start an argument here, and I don't want to start a war, so I'll tread lightly there on that subject. So, anyway, Damien says he wanted a .45 ACP, and you know, he said at first he, you know, was able to shoot it well, and he wanted something that would pack a big punch. He said, my mistake was that I only focused on caliber and nothing else. How about that? Any of you ever make that kind of a mistake? I did. I focused on caliber. You know, How about that? You know, if you haven't been listening to me very long, you probably don't know this, so I'll go ahead and I'll repeat it. I first started shooting 1911s. The very first guns I purchased were very expensive Kimber 1911s. I'm not picking on Kimbers. All right, I'm just saying, I'm not picking on 1911s either. I thought I had to have a 45, and I thought, all right, what's the best caliber that I can, or what's the best gun I can own that shoots the 45 caliber? Well, I thought the 1911, and a lot of people still feel the same way, that that's the best caliber that you can, or best gun you can shoot if you're going to shoot the 45 ACP. I used 1911s for about 2.5 years. Here's the problem. I wasn't carrying them enough. And there's really only two reasons why I don't have a 1911 anymore. And by the way, somebody told me, somebody asked me if I still have my my Kimber 9mm 1911. I just recently sold it. I'm going to put that money to some good use a little bit later on in the year that I will tell you about. That's one of the guns I don't regret selling, my 9mm Kimber 1911. But the problem is I wasn't carrying these guns enough because they were too heavy. They weighted me down too much. They were fine guns. You know, I had some failures that I didn't expect, but, you know, I got over it, and I got the gun to work right with the right type of ammo and things like that. I also don't like the thumb safeties, and I've talked about that before. But I was like Damien. I only focused on caliber. Now, Damien says, once I owned the Glock 36, I realized that the 45 ACP round was expensive to buy, and I was not able to practice as often due to the cost of ammunition. I also realized that the Glock 36 only holds 6 rounds, and that became a concern as I learned more and more about real-world encounters. If my skill at the range decreases during a real gunfight due to many factors, chances are I may miss more than I want to. Boy, isn't that the truth. You know, I've heard it said that you're only going to be half as good in a real gunfight as you were at the range. So if you can hit 8 out of 10 from 12 yards, for example, you're only going to hit 4 out of 10, if you're lucky. Maybe not even that. What is it? Something like the average hit ratio for law enforcement is something like 23% or something like that? Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But I think I read that somewhere. Some extensive testing was done. And that law enforcement officers typically only hit with 23% of their shots fired. Okay, so think about that. And then lesson number two, Damien says that he learned. He says it's best not to ever sell a gun, but if you have to do it, the model that you have may not be in demand. And see, that's something that I didn't think about till Damien sent me this email. You know, fortunately, I haven't purchased any guns that weren't in demand, and so anything that I've ever sold has been fairly popular. In fact, I didn't even have any problem selling my 9mm Kimber. Damien says, I never considered how difficult it would be to sell a Glock 36. It's a Glock, after all. But many potential buyers were interested in the Glock 19, the 17, or the 23. The 23 being in 40 caliber, by the way. He says, I found out real quick that the Glock 36 was not popular among buyers, and it became difficult for me to sell it. See, I think that's an excellent point. Again, it's best not to sell a gun. Don't buy a gun with resale value in mind. This is my opinion here. This is not Damien's email. My suggestion is don't buy a gun with resale value in mind. See, don't buy a gun thinking, well, you know, if I don't like this, I'm just going to sell it later on. I would not suggest doing that. What do you think? I would suggest buying a gun with the intent that you're going to keep it and train with it and learn how to shoot it. So be careful when you buy it. Try as many different guns as you can. Be patient. Slow down. Slow down your buying decision. Try as many out there as you can. Rent them. Borrow them. Do whatever you have to do to figure out what you're going to like. And don't just fire 10 rounds through a gun and think, oh yeah, this works for me. This is good stuff. Fire 100, 150, 200 rounds through it. I would rather see you spend $150 on rental guns, renting a whole bunch of different guns and buying their super high expensive ammo that they sell at the rental ranges. You ever notice that? Gosh, man. Boy, they sure make a killing on their ammo, right? When I first started shooting, I couldn't figure out why they required that you buy their ammo to rent a gun at a range. You know, and they always give you this excuse. Well, we want to make sure that you don't ruin the gun, and so that we want to regulate the ammo. We don't want to make sure that you're not doing anything unsafe with ammo that you bring in from the outside. I don't think that's true. I think it's all about money. They just want to rape you on the cost of the ammo at the rental range. All right, anyway, just my personal opinion there. But I'd rather see you spend a lot of money doing that first so you can make an intelligent buying decision and get what you want and get what's going to work for you rather than buying the wrong gun and having to sell it later. Okay, think about that. And then the third lesson that Damien writes about buying and selling a gun, he says no matter how clean the gun is, you're going to lose money on it when you sell it. Isn't that the truth? Unless it's a collector's item and you bought it right and you bought it really low, you know, if you've perfected the art of buying low and selling high, which is very difficult to do. I think when it comes to buying and selling guns, unless you really know and you study this stuff, I think it's very difficult to be able to buy low and sell high. I'm not saying it's impossible, I'm just saying it's tough. For the average person, for the average Joe like me, it's not easy to do because I don't pay that close attention to the collector value or the resale value of guns. I'm sure Rick Brenneman from the Power Factor Show, I'm sure he does. That's why I've had him on here twice talking about old collectible guns. So if I was going to buy something with the intent of maybe trying to make a little money on it later on or something, I think I'd probably consult a guy like Rick first. But I'm just not going to mess with that. That's not why I own guns. So back to Damien's email. He says his Glock 36 was only 5 months old when he purchased it new out of the box. No, excuse me. His Glock 36 was only 5 months old, and he purchased it new out of the box. He says it was so clean you couldn't tell it apart from a brand new one. But he ended up selling it at a larger loss than he wanted because none of the civilian buyers were interested in that particular model. He says, well, there you have it. You live and you learn. I don't want to ever sell a gun again, but in this particular case, I really had no option. I needed to sell my Glock 36 in order to purchase my fourth generation Glock 19 that I really wanted. It was a bad experience, so next time I will consider the total cost of ownership. See, isn't that true? Consider the total cost of ownership, not just the price of the gun, but ammo and finding holsters for the things and everything else. So thanks, Damien. Thanks for sending that in. He says, by the way, he's Yankee with a gun number two. Thanks a lot. But, you know, good stuff. I mean, you know, those are good lessons learned. And, you know, if some of you had something to add to that, you're welcome to post it on the forum. I think that would be a good topic starter on the forum, don't you think? Lessons learned from buying and selling a gun. I think that'd be pretty cool. If somebody is listening to this show and you want to start a thread on the forum about that, feel free. I may not get a chance. By the time I post this, I might not get a chance to get on the forum because I'm going to be pretty busy this week with a lot of traveling. Okay, now the next email that I want to cover, I have to apologize to the person that sent me this email. I printed this email and I did not print your name. When I printed this, the printer cut off the name of the person that sent me this. So I'm very, very sorry. But this person has a show topic for me. Says he was listening to the Pro Arms podcast. And he got this idea and he wanted to email it to me. He wanted me to do a topic on how to test a new firearm. For example, what distance to shoot from. Do you use a bench rest in combination with standard shooting stance? What type of groups are you looking for? How many rounds should you fire in your test? How to learn what your sights are doing at various distances? Do you need to aim dead center or slightly below or above the sights at various distances? And should you be aware of the different sight types and how they work with the gun that you're shooting? So whoever sent me this, this is terrific. I'm going to cover a little bit of this right here on this show, but I am going to do a more extensive show on this. I've played around with it. Again, you know, I've said before, I am no firearms expert. You're just getting everyday guy perspective. But, you know, maybe the everyday guy's perspective is somewhat useful to you. since I would assume that probably most people that are listening to this are just ordinary people anyway that want to learn more about guns. The distance that I typically shoot from when I'm testing a gun is about 10 yards. The first couple magazines I'll shoot at about 7 yards, but I want to see what it does between 7 and 10 yards. That's just kind of my preference. I don't bench rest. I just shoot from a standard shooting stance. Now, the only time I ever use a square range anymore is when I'm testing out a gun or testing sights, or if I buy, you know, if I make some modifications to one of my competition guns, for example, I'll go to the square range just to test it out, make sure that it's running right. If I make a drastic switch in ammo, sometimes I'll go to the square range and I'll test that out. Otherwise, all the practice and training I get, I use IDPA and USPSA matches for practice, and then I take training classes for real self-defense training. That's pretty much 90% of the shooting that I do anymore, so no bench resting for me. Groups, that's a tough one. You know, I would say, depends, of course, the distance. If I'm shooting at 25 yards, I'm looking for 4-inch groups or less. To me, if I can take a gun, and after getting used to that gun, if I can shoot 4-inch groups at 25 yards, it's good enough for me. It's a handgun. That's good enough for me. I'm probably not going to take any shots at 25 yards. Highly unlikely. I've said this before, but I firmly believe that if you shoot at somebody at 25 yards with a handgun, you're going to be making a really tough case to show someone that was self-defense, to prove to a jury that that was a self-defense shooting. Remember, handguns are defensive weapons. The rifle is the offensive weapon. Now, I'm not saying that it's impossible you'll have to shoot it that far, but you know, get out of the way. If somebody's threatening you from 25 yards, try to get away first. Okay, how many rounds am I firing in my grouping, or in my test? You know, when I test a gun, I run 150 rounds through it. I mean, like I said, you know, I want to be sure, and so if I'm going to spend my time and money testing out a gun or testing some modifications I've made to my gun, I'm going to shoot 150 rounds. I just feel comfortable with that. Do you need to aim dead center or slightly below or above your sights at various distances? You know, that's going to depend on the sights. It's hard for me to answer that because I don't know what sights that you're going to have. For example, if you're using the XS big dot sights that I like, yeah, you have to aim those differently. You've got to use the top of the dot at distances of 25 yards, whereas you use the middle of the big dot at distances that are more realistic for self-defense, like 3 to 12 yards. So there's differences. Yeah, you're just going to have to, you know, try and run that target out to different distances, and that's why I say shoot 150 rounds or a couple hundred rounds. You'll figure it out what you got to do with the sights. Okay? Just play around with it, I think, and you'll figure it out. I am going to do more on that topic, on testing out guns. So good suggestion. Whoever sent that, once again, I sincerely apologize that I left your name off. Okay, the next email I want to cover comes from a guy named Mark. Okay, he wrote this email to me last Tuesday on the 15th of March, and he says, I listened to a couple of your shows last night, Bob. He said, one was the interview with John Payne. You do a nice job, and I appreciate the show, and I'll continue to listen. Well, first of all, Mark, thank you for the excellent feedback. His question to me is, have you ever experimented with center axis relock, also known as CAR, center axis relock? I took an IPD class last November, and I'm very impressed with the system. It might make a good topic for a future show. Mark, you know what? Hey, Mark, I have a good friend of mine that loves to use center axis relock. I would encourage anybody listening to this show, get on YouTube and type in the search bar center axis relock. You'll see a guy, I'm pretty sure he's a British guy, and I can't remember his name. He's a firearms trainer. His name is escaping me right now. He does a real good job demonstrating this type of shooting stance. Now, I tried it. I have to say it does a really good job of reducing felt recoil. I noticed that, but it just kind of feels unnatural to me. So yes, I have experimented with it. Perhaps, Mark, I didn't give it quite enough chance, but I have experimented with it. It seems kind of strange to me, but you know, it might work for you. So check it out. You know, I'm an open-minded guy. I'm going to try it again. And you gave me a good idea for a future show, Mark. I think I'm going to try it for a little while. Try that. In fact, I'm going to have to practice that and kind of get it down and then try it, and I'll do a show on it. Hard for me to explain on an audio podcast, folks, what center axis relock is. It looks a little bit unconventional in terms of how you're placing your arms and your stance and so forth. Here's the thing that I want to say about stance and grip. Some people might not like what I'm about to say. That's okay. I like to take a lot of chances on this show every once in a while. And again, it's just my opinion, folks. Don't take what I say as gospel. You know, I think about what happens if I'm in a fight with my gun. I'm not going to have the time, in my humble opinion, to really analyze my grip and my stance. Now, I know people say, well, you know, Bob, you default to your training. So however you train, that's probably what you're going to, you know, fall back to. And that's true. I train myself to shoot from different stances, different positions. You know, I train myself to shoot in a lot of strange, different positions and with my arms and hands in different configurations than the normal shooting stance. And the reason for that is because I don't know what the bad guy's going to do to me. You know, they may have a hold of one arm and I'm only shooting with one arm. Well, you know what? Throw center axis relock right out the window. I mean, in that case, I'm one-arm shooting, and I'm not going to worry too much about stance. If I got a bad guy, or if I'm attacked by two people, and one of them is trying to wrestle me to the ground, and I'm halfway to the ground already, and I've only got one hand on my pistol, forget center axis relock or Weaver stance or isosceles or any of that junk. So I better, you know, train myself to shoot that way, and that's one of the benefits that you get from good self-defense training. Any instructor worth their salt is going to teach you how to shoot under some very adverse conditions where you can't get the perfect grip and the perfect stance. Or maybe you can't even use your sights. Or maybe you're running. Have you ever tried shooting while you're running? I mean at a fast run. Not at these fast walks that you see people in IDPA doing. And folks, I'm not picking on IDPA. I love it. You know, you guys have heard me talk so much about the competition sports and how important I think they are. It helps you with your gun handling skills, plus it's fun. But you know, you get some of these gamers in IDPA, and they're asked to advance from point A to point B to make a shot, and they do this real slow and deliberate movement, or they try to, you know, they slow down as much as they possibly can, but they're still moving, you know, because the course of fire says, well, you got to be moving, and so they're barely moving. That's probably not going to happen in a real life situation, folks. In a real life self defense situation. Well, you have to use your gun. I bet there's a pretty good chance you're not going to be moving slowly. I bet you're going to want to be getting the heck out of there, especially if bullets are flying back at you. Don't you agree? I mean, maybe some of you have different experiences. I don't know. I'd love to hear it. That's what the forum is for. That's what the comments section at handgunworld.com. You know, below every podcast posting, there's comments. Please use those. So if you have different ideas, again, I've never been in a gunfight. And boy, am I glad about that. So that's why I'm calling on some of you. If you've ever been in a fight and you've had a chance to practice getting into center axis relock or the Weaver stance, or you've been able to use your isosceles and everything, you know, line up sights and everything all just perfectly while you're being shot at, let me know. Or while you're being attacked, let me know. But Mark, it was a good question. It really was a really good question, and I am going to expand on that. I am going to do some more studying and research and trying out center axis relock. See, you know what you just did for me, Mark, by sending me that email? You just gave me an excuse to go out and try something new. And boy, I love that. Especially when I get to go out and try a new shooting technique, because I like to shoot so much. It's fun. See, now I have an excuse, Mark. Thanks. Appreciate that. Okay, next email is from a guy named Mike in Topeka, Kansas. He said he's interested in getting his concealed carry license, and he's read and he's studied a lot, and he's been trained by the military, and he's gone hunting a lot with his father, and his father always taught him, if you can point a gun at something, your goal is to kill it. And so Mike writes, I don't know if Stopping somebody would be my first reaction. Therefore, I proceed with caution with my choice to carry, and I was wondering, what are your thoughts? And I think what he's asking me is, what's my thoughts on stopping somebody versus killing somebody? So, Mike from Topeka, I hope I got your question or the gist of your question correctly. My thoughts are this, folks. Stop them. Do what you have to do to stop them. There's a big difference between stopping someone and killing somebody. I don't advocate killing somebody. Now, my goal is to shoot effectively enough and have effective enough ammo with a decent enough caliber to stop somebody. In other words, stop them from what they're trying to do to me. That's my only goal, is I want to stop that person. If the bad guy dies because he made the poor choice to attack me, and I try to stop him with my handgun, and he dies, well, then so be it. It was not my intent to take a life. But, hey, if the bad guy chooses to attack me, he's the one that made the bad choice, right? I'm just doing what I have to do to defend myself and defend my family if somebody is with me. If I have a loved one with me and their life is in danger too, I'm just going to do what I have to do to make the jerk stop. If he dies, oh well. There's, you know, I mean, it was his bad choice. And Mike, I understand what your grandfather was teaching. You know, my parents taught me the same thing when I was young. If I heard it once from my dad, I heard it 1,000 times. Don't ever point that gun and pull that trigger, son, unless you want to kill what you're shooting at. From a hunting perspective, yes. I think that's definitely true when you're hunting. You know, shooting at another person in self-defense, I don't know, man. You know, I mean, I hear all these comments, and some of these internet commandos, they put stuff out on the internet like, shoot to kill. Make sure you shoot to kill because, you know what, a dead man tells no tales. You know, and all that macho stuff. You know, they try to justify it by saying, well, you know what, he can't come up with a story against you if he's dead. Well, yeah, that's true, but you could get charged for murder, folks. And I don't know. I mean, if I stop somebody and they don't die, I got a feeling I might not be in as much trouble as I would be if I killed them. Now, again, I'm not a legal expert, and I'm not a lethal force expert. You know, Masad Ayoub is a great lethal force expert. So I'll kind of defer to him. To some of his material, listen to what Masad Ayoub says about using lethal force. There's tons of stuff out there that he's put out from the Pro Arms podcast and also from Lethal Force Institute. But my common sense here is telling me that if I have to use my gun and I stop somebody, let's say I put a couple rounds on the bad guy and he goes away, I've achieved my goal. If he doesn't die, I might get charged with a crime, or, you know, I might get charged with something. And hopefully if I've used my head, I won't be convicted, but I still may have tons and tons of legal fees, and it might be a tough process to go through, I'm sure. But I bet the charges are going to be a lot less than if I killed that person. Now, as I'm saying, I'm going to shoot to stop. So if he dies, I mean, if I hit a good center a mass shot, or if I put a shot right in his heart, that first shot, if I stick it right in his heart, yeah, he may stop. And guess what? He may also die. If my first shot is right in the central nervous system, guess what? He'll stop, and he may die. But I was shooting to stop him, and he died in the process. Tough question. This is a tough one, Mike. You know, Mike from Topeka, this is a really good question. Anyway, there's my thoughts on that. I would welcome your thoughts. Let me know what you think, folks. As you know, I like feedback, so let me hear it. Okay, the next email that I want to cover comes from Richard in Benbrook, Texas, not very far from where I live. He writes, "Hi, Bob. I've listened to all of your Handgun World shows, and I've been very interested in your IDPA and your training reports. I don't know if you visit the Texas Gun Talk forums." He says he saw some posts on Texas Gun Talk from John Payne recently. And to answer your question real quick, Richard, no, I have never been on TexasGunTalk.com. on their forum, but I think I'm going to check it out now that you've sent this in to me. He says he saw that there's a free one-day defensive handgun course coming up in Greenville, Texas, on April 16th. Wanted to know if he thought he should take that. Well, yeah, sure. That'd be great. Take that. Let me suggest this for those of you who live in North Texas. If you're thinking about going to close-range gunfighting, I think you heard John Payne say that it's not really a class for beginners, and I would agree with him on that. Really isn't. Just really is not a class for beginners. If you are a beginner, but you want to get the training on May 28th and 29th, maybe going to a class like this in Greenville on April 16th, a free one-day course. You know, I looked up that website, by the way, Richard, and it looks like they're doing the free one-day to kind of promote the rest of their training. And that's okay. That's cool. I think that's good. I think you'll still get a lot out of the one-day class. If this trainer's worth his salt, I mean, you're probably going to learn some good basics there about gun handling, and it couldn't hurt. So, you know, Richard, I would say go to that class. And by the way, if some of you that are listening to this, if you're wondering what I'm talking about, I'll go ahead and put a link to that class. They call themselves the Critical Defense Group. Critical Defense Group. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can check that out. And by the way, Richard, also do the best you can to join me at IDPA. Fort Worth is not very far from Benbrook. Let me know, and I might meet you out to Fort Worth on a Thursday night over at the Winchester Gallery gun range, and go shoot with the Cross Timbers IDPA team. That's also a good way to get some of the basics down, is go shoot IDPA. So, yeah, Richard, go take that class. It might be a good warm-up and good prep work, or a good preparatory session for close-range gunfighting. Or another class. I mean, hey, folks, you know, you've been hearing me talk a lot about, you know, CRG with Suarez International. It's not the only class out there. There's lots of good schools. So it just happens to be a class that I'm going to be going to because it's coming to my backyard again. But there's a lot of good classes out there, so go get yourself some training. Okay, this next email is going to be my last one that I'm going to cover. So this show might be a little bit shorter than what you're used to. But, you know, folks, I've been putting out some pretty long shows lately, and I really appreciate you hanging in there with me through some of those long shows and long interviews. I very much appreciate that. So Charlie writes to me, and he says, "Hi, Bob. I was wondering what are your thoughts on the Kel-Tec PLR-16? He says, "I'm not sure if you could make an entire show out of this topic, but it would be interesting to talk about a pistol of this size for concealed carry, and I wonder what all the 1911 guys would think of this when it's chambered in 5.56. I hear a lot of people say more is better. Me, personally, I am happy with my Glock 17, and my backup gun is a Ruger LCP. So I'm just interested in what you think. My local gun store says you can walk out the same day if you have a concealed carry permit with the gun, and the gun is classified as a pistol." I'm going to put a link to the Kel-Tec PLR-16 in the show notes. If some of you don't know what it is, it's manufactured by Kel-Tec. They call it a pistol. And I guess by the legal definition, it is a pistol. It shoots the 5.56 or 223. It is a big pistol, folks. For concealed carry, I don't think so. Not me, not most people. I mean, I have never heard of somebody concealing a Kel-Tec PLR-16. I mean, this thing's a big... I think this damn thing's got like an 8-inch barrel or 9-inch barrel or something like that. I mean, the thing's huge. It's huge. And, you know, it shoots... I mean, it's a high-capacity weapon. Shoots the 223 or the 5.56. And, you know, folks, hey, it's a dandy weapon. And from what I understand, they're quite reliable. And, of course, you know, anything Kel-Tec puts out, they give you a lifetime warranty on it. Now, you know, I'm not going to pick on Kel-Tec as a manufacturer. I have owned a Kel-Tec firearm. In fact, one of the guns I do regret selling is the Kel-Tec P3AT, which is the 380 version of their pocket pistol. I wish I still had that little thing. And I actually had to send it back to Kel-Tec shortly after I got it. But when I got it back from them, it ran fine. So, you know, Kel-Tec's... they're priced very, very well. This PLR-16, I can't remember. I'm driving right now, and I don't have a way to look it up on the internet. I don't know what it's priced, but it's the last I remember, it was pretty reasonable, okay? But concealed carry, I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I know it would be kind of cool to have a high-capacity weapon shooting the 5.56 for concealed carry, wouldn't it? I mean, that sounds cool, but, you know, I've said many times, I think the key is to have a pistol or a revolver or whatever that you can carry anywhere at all times. Unless, of course, you're in a area where you're forbidden to carry. I don't see this Kel-Tec PLR-16 being that kind of weapon. I see it being more of a novelty gun. I mean, you know, I think it even takes AR magazines. But you know, I mean, come on, folks. This thing is, it looks like it'd be a hell of a lot of fun. I would love to shoot the darn thing. I really would. It would be a fun range toy. I mean, I really think it would be an excellent range toy. I mean, what's really cool is it's got a handguard like an AR-15. I think they sell it with a handguard with a rail system on it. And again, you can put 30-round AR mags in it, and it's got a pistol grip. And, you know, I mean, I think it's probably got something like an 8 to 10-inch barrel or something like that, or 9-inch barrel, roughly. But it's like 5 pounds unloaded. So for concealed carry, I don't think so. But wouldn't that be kind of fun? And I suppose you could call it a good long-range pistol. I guess if you're looking for a long-range pistol. But why? I mean, why would you own something like that when you could just buy a regular AR, in my opinion? I mean, basically, it shoots AR-15 magazines, and it's got a long barrel, and it shoots the AR-15, the 5.56 NATO round. But why? Why not just get out an AR? I mean, if you're going to have to shoot that range with that kind of a round, then just why not get out an AR-15 or get out a Ruger Mini 14 or something like that, or get your AK out and take care of business if it's a long range encounter. Now, to Charlie's point in the email about the fact that he can just walk out with it the same day if he has a concealed carry license, isn't that great? Man, in states like that, you know, here in Texas, if you have what's called the CHL, we call it CHL here, concealed handgun license, you can buy any gun, and you can skip the background check, and you can just walk out with the gun the very same day. Fill out the 4473 form, show him your concealed carry license. The dealer will take care of whatever paperwork he's got to take care of. He doesn't even have to call in to get a background check done on you. See, they're sensible here in Texas, folks. I mean, they are. Here in Texas, I guess they figure if you've gone through the background check and the class to get your CHL, that you're a good guy. Right? I mean, they get it right here. They know that you're a law-abiding person. So, they make it very easy for you to purchase a weapon. If you need a weapon and you need it for self-defense and you need it quickly, we don't play games like making you wait 5 days or 10 days or 30 days or any of that bogus crap. Right? I really feel bad for citizens where they have to wait after they buy a gun. What if it's a woman who fears for her life? What if it's a woman who's got some guy stalking her and she's got to wait 5 days or 7 days before she can pick up the gun? They're putting her life in greater danger by making her wait to pick up that gun. Did the pinheads who make those laws ever think of that? So anyway, I don't want to get off on a rant on that, but back to this PLR-16 by Kel-Tec. Hey, Charlie, that is one cool gun, and I have always wanted to shoot one of those, and I think that would make a heck of a fun day at the range and a heck of a great conversation piece, but concealed carry, I don't know. Tell me how you'd conceal something like that. A 5-pound gun? I don't know, man. But I would say this, if you've got the money and you just want to buy it for fun, and you got all your other firearms and training needs met, and your self-defense training all up to snuff and everything, then go buy it and go have some fun with it. So, hey, I think the more firearms that the people have, the merrier, right? An armed society is indeed a polite society, and it is our Second Amendment right, and we have the right to defend ourselves, plain and simple. And I want to close with this. It's regarding a post that I made on the Gun Rights Radio Network. The thread is about the Texas Senate that has recently passed a bill that would allow people to keep guns in their cars when they're in their cars are parked in the in parking lot of their employer. In other words, it prevents employers from banning people from keeping a firearm in their vehicle. And about halfway through the thread, I made a post in response to another poster that said that that was kind of a slippery slope because it could, you know, property owners have the right to do what they want with their property. And if they want to ban guns from their property, they have the right to do that. And so I want to clear something up because, first of all, folks, you got to understand something. I never take offense to anything posted on the forum. There are some people that think that I've taken offense to some things that have been put on there. No, I don't. Now, there are times where if I disagree with something, I may challenge the person who posted it, and I may fire back, or I might ask you to clarify, or I might do both. I might inject my own opinion as to what you said and ask you to clarify what you said. And still, I might not agree with it, but that's okay. That's good, healthy debate, isn't it? I hope that doesn't offend you because, you know, what kind of a society do we have if we cannot have good, healthy debates? My opinion on this subject of whether a property owner has the right to ban guns from their property, here's all I'm saying. This is all I meant by that post. I don't believe that a property owner should have the right to arbitrarily deny somebody one of their constitutional rights that are protected by the Constitution. The right to keep and bear arms is a constitutionally protected right. I want to say a little bit more on that in a minute. So should a property owner have the right to take that right away from me? I don't think so. I think it's more of a slippery slope when we start letting other individuals take away our constitutionally protected rights. So yeah, it is a slippery slope when you start to put restrictions on property owners, but think of what you're saying when you say that another man or woman, just because they own a business or they own a piece of property, can strip me of a constitutionally protected right. Doesn't that go too far? Isn't that a slippery slope? I mean, you think about this. I'll give you an example. If I wanted to organize a protest at the United States Supreme Court, there's a process that I would have to go to, but it's quite likely I could get a permit to peacefully protest under the free speech right that is protected under the Constitution. I'm probably going to have to get a lot of permits, and I'm probably going to have to justify, you know, my protest and so forth. But I'll probably be given the right to organize a group and go protest some type of an issue that maybe I don't agree with that the Supreme Court is deciding on. Okay? Would I be able to just go to Washington, D.C. tomorrow with a group of people and stand outside the Supreme Court building open carrying my Glock 19? What do you think? How quickly do you think that the cops would show up and haul me away and everybody else that's with me if we're all standing out there with our pistols on our hips, open carrying in front of the Supreme Court building? They wouldn't let us do it. First of all, Washington, D.C. does not allow open carry. I mean, they barely even allow you to own a gun now. I mean, for a long time, you couldn't even have a handgun if you lived in Washington, D.C. You couldn't own one. They sure as heck are not going to let me and a bunch of other people, even if we're law-abiding citizens, go out there. They would not even give us a permit to go open carry in front of the Supreme Court, would they? So here's my point. They don't treat the Second Amendment as with the same respect as they treat other amendments, right? They treat my right to free speech with more respect than they treat my right to carry a gun. The government treats my right to due process if I'm charged with a crime. They treat that with more respect and higher regard than they treat my right to carry a gun. So my point is, the Second Amendment does not enjoy the same status as all the other amendments. It just doesn't. It doesn't enjoy the same status. And so what I meant by that post on the forum was that I don't think an employer should be able to take away our right to carry a gun, or our right to free speech, or our right to be protected against discrimination. An employer should not be able to take away our right to due process. Our employer should not be able to take away basic constitutional rights. We have, in the United States of America, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what would happen if President Obama was out there calling for common sense discrimination? Huh? Think about that. What if all of a sudden he held a press conference and says, you know what, I want to push the Congress of the United States to pass some common sense discrimination laws. Right? We should have some ability to at least impose some type of discrimination on the American public. Are you kidding? I mean, how fast would he get impeached if he did that? But he's out calling for common sense gun control, isn't he? And all that seems to be okay with a lot of people. Oh, yeah. People think, you know, there's still a lot of people in the United States that say, yeah, we need some common sense gun control. But they wouldn't vote for common sense discrimination, would they? You see what I mean? The Second Amendment does not enjoy the same status that all of the other amendments do. And that, it was my main point that I was trying to make. You know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. But I think that once a property owner decides to become an employer, I think it's a different ballgame. And we need to fight for the Second Amendment, folks. We got to fight. We need to fight to make the Second Amendment equal status to all of the other amendments. That's why I like to join the NRA. That's why I like to support the Second Amendment Foundation. That's why I like to support causes that are standing up for the Second Amendment rights. Keep and bear arms. The way I interpret that, I'm not a legal scholar, but my interpretation is the right to keep arms means we have the right to own them. And the right to bear arms means I have the right to put a gun on my body and carry it around for self-protection. That's what bearing, in my opinion, means. I have the right to bear that pistol, to bear that Glock 19 on my hip to protect myself in case somebody attacks me. And nobody, not even a property owner, should have the right to take that away from me. That's just my two cents, and now I'll shut up. But hopefully I've clarified myself. You know, Chem Soldier, you know, your post on the forum, you bring up great points. You really do. You bring up great points. I just disagree with part of it, respectfully. I hope that you realize I'm trying to be respectful, okay? And that's it. So anyway, that's it, folks. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 114 of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Once again, folks, the email is bob@handgunworld.com, and the website is handgunworld.com. And I hope you enjoyed this. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.